Hi, I want to welcome everybody today to the Sincere's first podcast, which actually is going to consist of a six-part series devoted to occupational hearing loss, education and awareness, and also the challenges that we face in eradicating hearing loss around the world for workers. I'm Amanda Miller. I'm CEO of Sincere and your host for today. Joining us is Dr. Keith Darrow, who is a nationally recognized speaker, trainer, and researcher. Dr. Darrow's work has been cited by over 550 times, and we're very honored to have you here today, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. And by the way, anybody who wants to eradicate hearing loss is a friend of mine. So we're officially friends, whether you like it or not, because I think that that is such an amazing mission. I always joke, I would love nothing more than to not have a job.
Yeah.
Because that means we have eradicated, cured, whatever word you want to use. And I think your spin, which is really the focus on the occupational side, the noise exposure, is so important because it can really help to delay the onset of hearing loss and all the bad things that come with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and for our listeners too, that may not be as familiar with your work, I think it'd be really good to maybe give us some background around, how did you become so passionate about this area? I mean, it's a very challenging area when we look at the stats over the years and things like that. So I'm very curious, just, you know, how did you zero in on this and where does your passion get derived from?
Well, I think it's, look, I love telling this story because it's the truth. I was, you know, finishing high school, entering college, didn't know what to do. My mother said, because I just, look, I'm in my late 40s. It's still easier to just do what your mother tells you to. And she said, why don't you look into speech pathology and audiology? And as soon as I took my first hearing class, I knew it. I knew that this was what I wanted. And look, that was some 20 plus years ago. But as I continued throughout my educational journey, I always found myself going to hearing loss, noise-induced hearing loss. And then as my career went on and I lost my grandmother, who I loved dearly, to dementia, and then research started coming out about the connections of hearing loss and dementia, right? It's like that flame has just continued to be fed over all of these years, right? It's not something, it didn't start that way. And I'm always honest about that, but it continues to be fed. And now I feel like we're in a position where we know so much about hearing loss. We know there's so much we can do to help avoid hearing loss through noise exposure that any platform that'll have me speak about it, I'm there. I want to get this word out because untreated hearing loss can be so damaging, and anything we can do to avoid that, I want to be part of it.
No, that's great. And, you know, and I really kind of want to hone in on a couple of comments you made there. You talked about, you know, how far we've come and how much we've learned about hearing loss and the impact and, you know, all the reasons why we continue to see this over the decades. But in your view, why haven't we progressed more? I mean, when you look at the stats and the number of workers and the number of employees that still suffer this year after year, you know, it's amazing the progress we've made in technology and research and everything else. But when it gets applied down at the employer and the employee worker, in your opinion, again, why have we not moved faster? Why haven't we haven't seen the numbers necessarily track to our knowledge that we've developed?
How controversial do you want to get?
I think it's, you know, it's an interesting topic. I mean, it is amazing me. It's amazing to me coming into this industry and seeing the progression of the research and all the technology out there. And that's exciting. I mean, there's a lot of focus there. But again, when you look at the numbers and the impact, there still seems to be this gap. And yeah, absolutely. I would love to have your thoughts on this.
So here, when I first started to learn about the impact of noise, I was kind of like, okay, I guess this makes sense. But then once I embarked, right? So I am a clinical audiologist, but I have a PhD in neuroscience, which I obtained from a joint program at MIT and Harvard Medical School. And when I started there, I went straight to my supervisor and I said, look, well, he was teaching one of my courses. I said, I'm kind of obsessed with this notion of what happens to the ears, what happens to the brain when it's overexposed to noise. Mm-hmm. And my professor said, look, I would love for you to come and work in my lab and to work on this. And we put out great research over the years about noise exposure. But what caught me was I learned early on that the regulations in place for noise exposure and what's tolerable, what's not tolerable. Here are the two most mind-blowing facts. Number one, the data that we still use today to say what is safe and what isn't safe was developed over 50 years ago. So that right there should have you scratching your head. Like, really? Have we not learned anything in the last 50 years? Right. I mean, so that in itself is a problem. Mm-hmm. And then number two, the data it was based off of, most noise exposure allowance data is based off of this jute weaving study where there was like this group of people who were working at this noisy place, and the standards that came out of it actually allow for a certain percentage of people to get hearing loss. So it's not even strict enough that, hey, let's set this bar here mm-hmm. and everybody below it is safe. It's actually like this bar wherein a certain percent of people, be it 10 to 25% of people, will suffer from noise-induced hearing loss, and hopefully the other 75% will be okay. So it's mind-boggling to me that we still base today's safety standards off of that type of data. And I know I simplified it, but that's really at its core how, you know, OSHA standards, workplace standards have been set up.
Okay. So what's the challenges in bringing that to the 21st century and bringing it most common?
Look, if there were no data to come out since then, I would say, well, it's just the best we have.
Right.
But I think what's the most striking, and I will come back and eventually answer your question, but let me go down this road here. What's most striking is that we learned in the mid-2000s, okay? So it's been almost 20 years since papers came out. This is peer-reviewed evidence-based data from Massachusetts Eye and Ear, from Harvard Medical School, that says exposure to noise, the issue is it can take 20 to 30 years to really rear its ugly head and become symptomatic. See, what we learned is that there used to be this concept of there's permanent noise damage and there's temporary noise damage. What all these papers told us about 20 years ago is there's really no such thing as temporary damage. There's no such thing as get exposed to loud noise, and then 24, 48 hours later, it goes back to normal. That's not what happens. The damage that comes from noise can take 20 to 30 years. It says it in the paper, 2 to 3 decades for it to become symptomatic. And it's as if we're ignoring this data that tells us how detrimental noise can be. And these experiments weren't done at like crazy rock concert levels. It wasn't like explosions. It was kind of like everyday work noise that was creating all this damage.
Okay. So how aware do you think users are of that? I mean, because a lot of times when you're talking to people, just as you said, you think, oh, this is something I'm going to, you know, be impacted by 20, 30 years, and there's not that kind of that short-term view on it. Is there still, I mean, is that part of the problem as well, as we still have this lack of awareness of what is damaging levels and how long do I have to be exposed to it to really see an impact on my quality of life?
Yeah, I think, I think it's human nature to say, hey, I was exposed to these loud sounds. You know, for some people, they wake up the next day with what I call the hearing hangover. So there's still some ringing in their ears. Things still sound a little foggy. Your ears feel full. But then 2 or 3 days later, it's back to seemingly normal. Mm-hmm. So I don't think enough people realize, well, wait a second, that was actually really bad and can have a long-term effect. And in general, look, it's a flaw of all of us humans. That's not the way we think. We think, oh, there was a problem, something bad happened, but I'm better now, so not a big deal.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. So, I mean, we talked a little bit about the regulations being dated. What are some of the other challenges that you see in work in the workplace and just, you know, having the best quality hearing protection program, conservation program? What barriers do you see there? And if you had your kind of your wish list of how we could do this better, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Look, I think it's a very valid argument from, say, the employee's perspective, from the on-the-job worker who says, look, I get it. Even if they completely agree, okay, I get it. This noise is bad. It's not good for my ears. It's not good for my brain. But if I wear hearing protection, I can't hear what's going on around me, and I'm at a much bigger risk for something bad happening to me today. So you want me to protect myself 20, 30 years down the road, but I want to be able to hear today so I don't get hit by a falling ton of bricks or fall off a ledge, right? So it's a pretty powerful argument, which is why I think some of the new technology, even sensor technology, that can allow you to protect yourself while still being able to hear, right? People think of hearing protection as a foam plug you put in your ear and you can't hear anything. Mm-hmm. Like, that's 40-year-old technology. That's crazy talk to think that that's where hearing protection is at. But that's what employers provide to their team because it's cheap. And it's easy to buy a 10-cent foam plug and say, here, put this in your ear. And then there's the issue of if it's even regulated or mandated by the employer.
Okay. No, I mean, there are some great points, and we see that all the time. And and because you brought it up, I really kind of want to dive into the situational awareness conversation, because we talk about situational awareness and the importance of it, and we know how critical it is from keeping the workers, you know, more safe in a comprehensive way. It, to your point, it's not just about the hearing protection. It's that peripheral awareness of what's going on around you and potential hazards. But I think one of the challenges that, you know, we're always looking at is situational awareness is not something that is a standard. It's not something that's quantified. And so a lot of the marketing information that's out there right now, I think, can be very confusing on how to bring that aspect and that importance into it. And, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that as well, because that's...
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there, right? It is all about situational awareness. So I don't, you know, in my, just give me a second here. In my undergrad classes, you know, I teach them all about hearing loss. And then we do a little experiment, and they have to take those foam plugs that are used on so many job sites, and they have to wear them for about 6 hours. And they, you know, they're supposed to, you know, go to class with it. They're supposed to go out to eat with it. And what always strikes me, and here's the deal, I don't talk about this. What always strikes me, though, is that over 90% of the people who, you know, they then write a report on how it made them feel. Over 90% of people say, I didn't feel safe. I didn't know what was going on around me. I felt off balanced. They didn't feel right. And so that situational awareness, imagine being at work in what's a pretty damn dangerous environment, especially compared to a classroom or going out to dinner. Imagine being in a potentially dangerous situation and lacking situational awareness. That is ultimately why I think there's such a lack of adoption to protecting your hearing. And I think that needs to be brought to the forefront. And that's why we have to take advantage of all the technology out there so people can be safe, meaning they protect their hearing, but also be safe in terms of situational awareness.
So, you know, what have you seen as far as barriers? I mean, again, I kind of go back to, you know, there's no standards on it. There's no regulations on it, but we know that it's so critical from a worker safety standpoint.
You said I can just go for it regardless of controversy. I think that ultimately boils down to cost.
Yep.
And it's a short-term cost though, right? Because right now in our country, you can't like get hearing loss from work and then go back later and like sue for it. So right now it's almost like there's also no consequence to the employer in that situation. And so right now they can just cheap out and say, hey, you want me to invest in this technology when I could just buy a foam plug for, you know, 10 cents, even if it's 10 cents a day, if they throw it out every day. Right. And so ultimately I do think cost is the big barrier. I think that because OSHA, and it's not just OSHA, so I don't mean to call them out, but I think OSHA, the government, I think because the standards haven't changed, there's been no motivation for, you know, whether it be insurance companies, whether it be HR, whether it be the government to actually say, hey, we'll go above and beyond what we need to. That's another thing you don't generally see the government and big organizations do is say, you know, I'm going to invest now in my team and get them the right hearing protection, make sure they're situationally aware and safe. So I do cost. I think it all boils down to that and policy.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a great point. And, you know, I'd love to dive into this a little bit more as well, because, you know, we talk again, human nature, short-term versus long-term, but we know that, you know, inadequate hearing protection and those type of things can have an impact on productivity, errors. And so despite, you know, the impact of it from an insurance standpoint, kind of being past the life of the worker with an employer, there are everyday instances that do have a financial impact to these companies, these entities, and to the workers. Do you hear people talking about that much?
No. I mean, I can elaborate, but yeah. The short answer is no, I don't hear people talking about that because, again, I'm going to go back to this society. We don't think and operate in terms of prevention. Mm-hmm. It's just the way we are. I mean, think about medicine. We don't even operate from a preventative medicine standpoint. And I definitely feel more comfortable talking about the medicine side than necessarily the corporate side. But right now, our entire healthcare system globally is based on reactionary medicine. You have a problem, let's try to fix it. Mm-hmm. We don't live in a medical world wherein the focus is on preventative medicine. And if we did, if we changed that, my gosh, how much money could we potentially save, right? So here are the examples that I can think of, because it's specific to hearing, and that's what we're talking about here. Untreated hearing loss, right? These are the terms I think of. People who have hearing loss are more likely to suffer a traumatic fall. Well, every time a person falls, the average American family spends about $30,000 per incident. Mm-hmm. Living with untreated hearing loss increases the risk of being hospitalized. That costs about $10,000 per hospitalization. And here's the biggest one to me is untreated hearing loss increases the risk of cognitive decline and dementia, which costs the average American family about $70,000 to $75,000 per year to care for a loved one with cognitive decline. So imagine if we just thought about it differently in terms of how can we save money down the road? How can we prevent bad things from happening and save money in the long run? But again, that's just not the way we tend to think. It's not the way our society tends to operate.
So do you think, I mean, from the employer standpoint, there's somewhat of a disconnect or educational opportunity there? Because, I mean, everything you said right here, you know, again, I think we kind of get blinders on when we're thinking about hearing loss and forget all of the adjacent, you know, comorbidities or, you know, impact that we have as a result of it. And for large, you know, there's a lot of large companies that are private insured. So, I mean, there is a health cost to these other things. Do we have enough education and knowledge really there to help them make that link that it's beyond just investing in a hearing set or, you know?
Yes. I mean, to me, there's no, everything I've said so far about the consequences of living with hearing loss, you can flip that coin and say, you know, you know, addressing hearing loss can eradicate, you know, falls, reduce the risk of dementia, all those things. I think of it, and I think you just hit the nail on the head there, is if we're thinking about the corporate world, think about the future insurance costs. Think about why insurance costs so much right now, because we're still in reactionary medicine. And so imagine, like, and again, just think about a big corporation where there's a lot of noise exposure they have to protect. And if retirement includes insurance, how much better off would you be if you protected your employees ahead of time to reduce the long-term insurance costs, mm-hmm. to reduce that burden later on for your business, for the patient, or for your, you know, former employee, I think could really be transformational. But again, it's that lack of education, the lack of health literacy, right. that extends to the general public, not just corporations, about how important hearing is and how detrimental noise is to our ears.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a great point. And I mean, it's something that I'm always kind of looking at, and how do we, and that's probably what we'll get into in some of the additional series as part of this program. One of the things I want to get back to as well is, we talked about moving the needle and kind of the challenges there. Where can employers and employees go for the best and most up-to-date information on the topics?
When I want real information, right? Not something in a news feed, not something on social media, I always sort of fall back on anything that's been peer reviewed, anything that you can find on PubMed.com, which is where evidence-based randomized controlled trials, you know, peer reviewed science is. That's just not sexy. It's not easy. It's not, you know, simple to digest. I would say going to the NIH, I would say going, look, your own website, Sensier, has put out a ton of educational information about occupational noise exposure, about what it does to the ears, to the person. So I think there's a lot of great resources out there. I don't know if I can pinpoint one.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. I mean, and as we go out, we know there's a lot of resources that are out there, and just trying to help our listeners and our audience today try to figure out, how do you muddle through a little bit of the clutter that's out there. And to your point, getting to those peer-reviewed documents, and getting to the research versus just simply articles or social media and other resources that may not be nearly as in-depth investigated, and the quality of them.
But it exists. See, that's the thing. It exists. There's hard data that has been out for, oh man, I'm talking like late 80s, early 90s, mm-hmm. that has shown that the current standards, so for 40 years, that today's current standards for protecting your ears and your brain at work from noise are not good enough, mm-hmm. right? This data has been out there for a long time. It's a matter of moving the needle. And again, needle probably isn't even the right word. It's really about moving mountains, because we're talking about trying to get the government to change the way they do things. I will tell you this, it's definitely different in other countries. And I think that is probably a great place to start. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, this was just a human observation. I was in Disneyland in Paris. This was several years ago. This was pre-COVID. And what struck me was every employee there had hearing protection on if they were working on or near a ride, right? So maybe not the people at, you know, the food industry, but if you worked on or near a ride, you had hearing protection in, even when it wasn't that loud. I'm talking like it's a small world, which isn't that loud. And so it made me look into it at the time, like, hey, what's different here? Because you ain't going to find that back here in the States. And I realized that they actually have much stricter noise exposure regulations in different countries. So I think that that is also a potentially great place to start, and a great argument to make of, hey, this is being done. It can be done. Let's just get off our laurels and do it.
Right. Okay, great. Yeah, I mean, I think with that, you know, we'll probably wrap it up. You know, 15, 20 minutes. Before we go, though, I mean, you're a great educator. I mean, we've all watched your podcast and things like that. Maybe sharing with our audience where to find your latest podcast information, things like that, to help educate themselves on some of your latest work and the
happy to. Yeah. I didn't want it to turn into like, I'm, you know, this is about you. This is about what everything you guys do. So, but I'm happy to get up more resources
users here in the audience. Getting sincere out there is one thing, but really our mission around this is trying to elevate that awareness and the knowledge of those peer reviewed research papers that are out there today. So that really what we want to do is get people to start challenging other manufacturers and knowing, you know, the right questions to ask and the right things to look for when they're looking not only at, you know, a device, but a complete conservation program. And so, yeah, it's, you know, it's got to go past the NRR rating or the SNR rating or, you know, what's written on there to how is that employee working? What are the other hazards we've talked about? And looking at technology and solutions that encompass all that. So I think you did a really great job of laying that all out for us. And I'm excited about getting to the next series where we really start diving into the, you know, the human factor of what really, you know, is going on here. And how complex it is from a quality of life standpoint as you go on. I mean, you've pointed to a lot of, you know, ancillary things that come into impacting us from a health standpoint long-term. But I can tell you my own experience, I would have never known that until I got into this industry and really started reading the research. And so that's why I'm always like, how do we get that to our workers? How do we get that awareness that, you know, wearing these devices solves so many more problems down the road for you.
And that, look, that is where, you know, that's where all of my knowledge comes in, all of my expertise, all of my experience, all of my research. So I definitely look forward to that with you. But, you know, if you want to, I'm always willing to share, but if you want to sort of talk about other resources, whether it be my podcast, my books, I mean, happy to share that information too. But today in the corporate, you know, sort of organization, like moving mountains, I mean, I'm a little less comfortable, but happy to talk about it because I think we have to, right? Yeah. We've got to have honest conversations about what's holding people back and what's wrong with the status quo.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great note to end on it. And so with that, we'll wrap this up and stay tuned for our next podcast where we'll be focusing. We'll have again our guest, Dr. Darrow here, talking about really what the employee impact of, you know, hearing conservation and hearing loss today. And what can we do to change that and move the mountain, as Dr. Darrow said. But until then, thank you guys for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Darrow. And we look forward to the next session.
Thank you very much.